Hoops fans, how you doing? It's your boy Jonathan Macri with you for another episode of NBA Takedown. I can't get my words out because I've been waiting for Friday this week more than I usually anticipate Friday. It's been a long fucking week. I blame the Knicks being on a back-to-back, which they should never do. But NBA owners, hey, they like their money. So who am I to say anything about any of that shit? Let me first introduce my usual co-host here, Sean with a W. Hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to say happy Steelers week to everyone in the Ravens fan base. And to the Steelers fans, you all can go to hell. And because I look forward to the battle of the Midway on Sunday and the emphasis on the word mid. Oh, as God. Both teams are 6-6
in the top North. You're more mid than our
team. No, we're both mid because, as a wise man once said, you are what your record says you are, and both teams are 6-6.
Well, as we were talking about before the show, I can't even call myself a Steelers fan anymore. I couldn't tell you four players on the team. It's a sad state of affairs. As I look, the boxes that I still haven't unpacked from when I moved 6 months ago, there's a Cordell Stewart signed mini helmet like 5 feet from my face right now. And yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. But
look on the bright side. After this, since both teams are 6-6, your kids will show interest in this game because whoever loses will be 6-7.
I can't believe you just did that. I hate you so much.
My son does that every day.
My 9-year-old knows, she's aware of the thing. I have not taken the time to figure out what it is about or where it's going. Maybe today's guest can shed some light on 6-7 of the No Ceilings Network. Is it a network? I think it's a network, right? Nathan Grubel, how you doing, man?
It's a media enterprise. Let's aim for the stars, everyone. Media enterprise. I'm doing well. I cannot offer any more context into the 6-7 meme. However, I am a Steelers fan, Sean, and I can say this team is absolutely mid. I would expect the Ravens to win this week. If they don't, you guys have bigger problems than we might, and I don't even know what our quarterback situation's looking like. I've wanted the coach gone for like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, no. No,
I'm not a Mike Tomlin guy. Listen, John, yes. Where's this team going with Mike Tomlin at the helm?
No,
where are we going?
They haven't been going anywhere this is why I'm a Fairweather Steelers fan. They haven't been going anywhere for years. But is that Mike Tomlin's fault? I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. I can't speak to it because I don't watch the team.
I can't believe the luck that I have two Steelers fans here during Steelers week. But I'll say this. Because the Steelers are mid and just waiting for someone to put them out of their misery, the Baltimore Ravens, I know if they're going to be like, nah, we're good. Let someone else do it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. By all means, Sean, go ahead.
Well, I know this team. Like this team watched Buffalo run the ball down their throat 400 times last week, and they're going to be like, you know what we should do? We should pass in every single down.
Listen, we will start Monday's show with I'm gonna make it a point to actually watch this game so we can start off Monday's show with some talk about it. But we have a lot to get to today, so let me just give everybody a little quick lowdown on how the show is gonna go. Sean is joining us for the takeoff in a second. Then he's got to get lost. Then Nathan and I are going to do our top five most intriguing rookies and sophomores in the NBA lists. If you are checking us out right now on Twitter, be sure to go over to the NBA Takedown YouTube page, obviously subscribe to that, and leave some comments in the chat throughout the show because we're going to try to save some time before we finish up so we could address your comments, answer maybe some questions about some young players in the NBA. And when I say we are going to do that, I mean Nathan is going to do that. But without further ado, let us get started with the takeoff.
2-1-0, ignition, liftoff.
All right, Sean, I know you got to get out of here. And also, you texted me late last night saying you just had to come on the show today just to get off whatever it is you want to say, I think, about LeBron James. So the floor is yours. Start us off.
So last night, LeBron James's double-digit streak streak of double-digit game scoring ending at 1,297 is a full circle moment of his career.
Okay. How so?
So for those who did not see the game, it was tied. The Lakers had the final possession. It was tied at 120. The Lakers were playing at Toronto. And no Luka in this game. So first of all, so Austin Reeves is based, the ball's in his hands. Toronto doubles him, forced it out of his hands. LeBron's the release man. LeBron drives, gets the foot in the paint. They collapse. And he has 8 points at this point. And he passes to a wide open Rui Hachimura in the corner, yep. Hits the game winning three, game over. And it's funny, I'm in a group chat, and someone in there who's, shout out to my man Mike, he's a Memphis Grizzlies fan. He covers the Grizzlies, and he is arguably the biggest LeBron hater I know, and he will admit that publicly. And early, about 3-4 minutes left of the game, he said, LeBron cares more about his streak than a losing to the Raptors in November. It's in December.
Popular talking point, yeah.
And we were all like, but LeBron always makes the right basketball play. And he had every reason to take that shot, because if he misses or gets blocked like he did the possession before,
yeah.
The game goes to overtime. He has 5 more minutes to get to 10 points. But the reason I say it's a full circle moment is because I will always remember the discussion after game one of the 2007 Eastern Conference Finals, when a young LeBron James against the Detroit Pistons
yep.
Has the ball, driving to the lane, kicks it out to a wide open Donyell Marshall, who shot like Donyell Marshall is one of the better 3-point shooters in the league.
Yeah.
He missed the shot.
Yep.
They lost game one.
Yep.
And that game was on TNT, I believe. And the scuttlebutt after was, why you got to take that shot? You're the man. Why would you do that? Yo, Kobe would have taken that shot. Michael Jordan would have taken that shot. That's the difference between these guys. And maybe smart people pushed back and said he made the right basketball play. And that was 2007. And fast forward to 18 years later, when it's in his DNA to always make the right basketball play. And he did it in a series that he got his team to the finals age 20. And now in season 21, 3 weeks shy of his 41st birthday, he still made the right basketball play.
I don't know why. I just wasn't expecting you to come on and stand for LeBron James, but kudos to you, because, you know, what does LeBron need but more stands, right? So great job by you, Sean.
Well, really, you know what?
Appreciate that.
Sorry. So, all right, let me go now, because I was trying to be nice. And listen, I like LeBron James.
You're being very nice to LeBron.
So now I have to be snarky, and I'll be snarky because John made me be snarky. Here's a snark.
What?
Not you, John, but to you, your GOAT doesn't make that pass. And you know who your GOAT is. Not you, John. Not you, Nathan. But you. And you know who I'm talking to.
You know what? I'm just going to let that sit out there. If you think that Sean is talking to you, he is.
No, simple as that.
All right, Sean, I'm going to kick you out. You got some shit to do, and I'm going to talk to Nathan. Thank you for coming on and getting that takeoff. That was a good take.
Thank you very much. You guys have a good time. Go Ravens. Ka-ka!
Oh, Jesus. I hate that so much. how you doing, Nathan? What's up?
Oh, I'm doing well. Do I not get to get off my hot take?
No, that's even... I had to get Sean's first, but you're the guest, so you go first. What's your hot take?
So we have a lot of Giannis Antetokounmpo scuttlebutt over the last few days.
I haven't noticed.
As a Knicks fan. In case anyone's out there living under a rock and they don't know what's going on, there's a lot of trade rumors happening right now, and you have a few suitors who have stepped up to the plate. We're getting some San Antonio Spurs buzz. Yeah. Golden State, always a team to monitor. Miami, I don't know how they would pull it off, but always a team to monitor. The most logical candidate for that trade would be the Atlanta Hawks because of the picks that they own. My hot take is the Atlanta Hawks should not make that trade.
Okay. On the last episode of Takedown, we played collectively, me, Sean, and Jeff, who's not here today, we played GM of the Atlanta Hawks. And okay. I wanted to do that because I think they're in this very fascinating team-building situation where obviously they have this pick, which I'm gonna get back to in just a moment because it has to do with my hot take. And we were discussing like basically obviously the Trae Young of it all, but do you trade for a Giannis if you can keep Jalen Johnson and Dyson Daniels? So I'm going to throw it back to you. What are your parameters in terms of like why they should not trade for Giannis?
So here's the thing. Number one, I, in my humble opinion, do not believe that trade happens without Jalen Johnson's inclusion.
Okay. So, well, that's it.
But understood. Let's move down the hypothetical of to what you asked, if they can keep Jalen Johnson and Dyson Daniels. What that trade would look like would essentially be something along the lines of Kristaps Porzingis' contract. You would have to throw Luke Kennard in there. This would have to be after December 15th.
Yep.
You would put Reese Hoshea in there. That makes the money work. And then we're talking about all the picks and all the swaps.
So hold on. You didn't mention Trae Young's name.
I did not mention Trae Young's name. So essentially what you're looking at is Giannis, Trae Young, Jalen Johnson, Onyeka Okongwu, Dyson Daniels, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker as your top six. Is that a good enough top six to win the championship? Because if you're making that trade, you believe that that's so, while also essentially trading away the rest of your assets, putting them all into that move to where if that top six is not good enough,
yeah,
you don't have experience depth behind those guys. You're not going to find those answers in the buyout market. And what moves are you left with, even as we would head into the summer and beyond, to try and still build out from those six guys because you're so locked into those six guys?
I think it's a good take and it's a fair take. The reason why you caught me off guard for a second is I had not been under the assumption, but I thought logically it would make the most sense for Atlanta to try to keep Porzingis because, again, as we've seen for however many years, ideal stretch five to play alongside Giannis. Mm-hmm. But then the money doesn't work if you're keeping Trae Young, which is why you're keeping Okongwu. And then the Okongwu-Giannis pairing, does that actually hold you back a little bit? I maybe it does because, again, we're just so used to seeing him play with a stretch five. But
Do you make that trade if you're trying to put Trae Young and get him out the door to get the move for Giannis? Does that also make sense? Because in my opinion, it doesn't. If Giannis is coming to Atlanta, you want another proven co-star in Trae Young to try and go come out of the East with.
And that's why I think the biggest question that I would be asking myself is if, again, in the scenario where you're sending Trae out, aside from the fact that does Milwaukee like put any value on getting a Trae Young? Do they want, like, there's so many variables. Like, how much does Milwaukee's ownership care about selling tickets next year, for instance? We don't know the answer, right? We don't know the answers to these questions. But putting that part of it aside, just to assume you're sending Trae out as the salary, you know, Jalen Johnson, who obviously you know a lot about because you scouted him when he was in college, like, there has been a playmaking element to his leap this year that seems, if you just look at the numbers,
walking triple double, baby,
seems very real. So is there that necessity to have the traditional playmaking guard in the backcourt as opposed to just trying to roll forward with Daniels and Nikhil Alexander Walker? And again, I'm not sure I know the answer to that question, but that's the sort of thing I'd be asking myself here.
In my opinion, the answer, I don't want to take up too much of your time away from
this is great.
But in my opinion, that answer is yes. I think with the way we've seen the league evolve and it's trends that I'm monitoring in terms of what we're doing in No Ceilings with scouting prospects for the draft, evaluating young talent, with all of these defenders on the perimeter who are 6'6", 6'8", with these massive wingspans, either you have to be so comfortable with that quote-unquote jumbo initiator to just be able to barrel through those guys and get to wherever he can go at any cost, or you need a guy who's skilled enough as a ball handler with the footwork and that craft and technique to be able to actually navigate through those tight spaces without turning the ball over at an exceedingly high rate. And so that's where I think that type of guard is still very valuable in the NBA, and these teams who are investing in all of this size and just throw as much size on the court as possible, they're not necessarily getting the return on their investment on the offensive end of the floor because they don't have those same types of decision makers in the backcourt who can actually get to where they need to get to on the court to make everyone else around them better.
it's a fascinating team building pivot point, fork in the road for this Atlanta team in particular, because, and I think the other part of it that's kind of, you know, sitting out there, and this is what makes, I think, all of the Giannis stuff very interesting, and it'll go right into my hot take, which I'll get to right now, is if you are a team where, you know, he is unwilling to give you any sort of guarantee, forget guarantee, any sort of assurance that it's he's going to stay past, you know, whenever he, when he could opt out in a year and a half, like, you know, obviously that is going to impact how much you are willing to put on the table. Which leads to my hot take, which is that are, and again, we I don't, if there has been firm reporting or even unfirm reporting that this team has is looking to get in this derby, I have not seen it. So I am, this is me making this up out of whole cloth. If the Lakers decide that they want to get in on this thing, might they wind up having the best package available for the Bucks? And I'm going to give you two angles on that before you think I'm nuts. Number one, we've heard Giannis talk about the value of European players playing in major cities. You would think that if he got to Los Angeles, that would be a place that he would want to continue to stay after this current contract runs out. So maybe that part of it puts them ahead of some other teams who would be less willing to put more on the table because they'd be fearful that Giannis would leave. And then there's the Austin Reeves part of it, and we don't have to go through the salaries. They could could build up the salaries. Like, there's that, that's possible. If you're the Bucks, yeah, you might be able to get a young, we, you know, we don't have to go through all the young studs that might be available in Giannis trade throughout the league. But Austin Reeves is not exactly old. And yeah, you're gonna pay him the max. Okay, great. Like, he's, you're gonna max him on day one. You're gonna be able to give him the extra year. You're gonna be able to give him the additional 8% raises. And you, most importantly, you are going to be able to say, this is your basketball team. You're gonna be able to go out and put up 30. You're gonna be able to put up Luka numbers over the however long you're here. And that dude, man, I, at what point do we need to have a different conversation about Austin Reeves being potentially a guy who not is the best player on like a title team, but could be your lead ball handler on a title team, could be your leading scorer on a title team. I just think there's a lot more there, and I'm wondering if that becomes something between now and if and when he gets traded.
So before I hopped on for this, as I was doing work at my other job, I had on the great Zach Lowe and Kurt Goldsberry in the background, and they were discussing this very topic of what does Milwaukee want back in a package? Do they want to stay relevant? Or do they want to build out all of the draft assets that they don't have?
Yep.
They would not necessarily be accomplishing that with a Lakers package, but you do get back Austin Reeves, who is an incredible guard in his own right, like you're talking about, John. He has been awesome for not just this year, for multiple years now in a row, looking like he could be the second or third best guy on a championship contending team. So if you're able to get that kind of player back, that is absolutely a package you consider if your goal is to maintain relevancy. My only counter to that, and I'm not trying to go deep into this rabbit hole. I know we have other stuff we want to talk about. But
oh, we could be here for 3 hours talking just fake Giannis trades. We're not going to do that.
The Zach and Kirk both brought up the idea of if this team wants to get into it, they might have the best player chip on the market for Giannis, which would be the Cavaliers and Evan Mobley if they want to get in that dance.
And so maybe – maybe that's why this is a hot take. If I'm a Bucks team starting from scratch, and I understand this runs counter to so much logic, I get it. I think I'd just rather have Reeves than Mobley. I think enough of what Mobley has not done this year scares me to the point where if I could get a guy who looks like he's a 30-10 guy, and it's like, yeah, the defense, whatever. But once you ascend to a certain level in the NBA, like, it's worth it. Like, the trade-off is worth it. You just can't have any other trade-offs elsewhere on your roster. But again, that's fine. And oh, by the way, as a fan of – and I wouldn't trade Jalen Brunson for anything, including Antetokounmpo. As a fan of a 6'1 in shoes guard, it's still probably easier to make hay with the six. What is he, Austin Reeves? What is he, 6'4", 6'5", whatever he is. Yeah, it's easier to make do with that, you know, if you're going to be dealing with defensive challenges. hello, what Jaylen Brown did to my guy the other night. So I don't know. I think it's a fascinating conversation. I can't wait to see how it unfolds. But we will have a lot of time to talk and think about that. Let's get into our lists. Sure. So I tasked you with coming up with your top five most intriguing players from the last two drafts classes. And I left it intentionally vague because ultimately it is what is intriguing to you. And you spend exponentially more time thinking about and these guys and looking at film on these guys and studying these guys than most people do. So before we get to, we'll start with number one. And then I'll as we go along the list, I'll kind of fill in what my top five were. When you think about what makes a guy, a young player, intriguing, give me like a very brief snapshot of like what you're thinking about and looking for.
Well, obviously, I want to talk about guys who are producing across the league. I don't necessarily want to bring up guys who, you know, haven't gotten their time, aren't necessarily relevant in the conversation, but I also want to look at them. If they're producing, I want to also be able to figure out why. Why is this situation not working for them? Why is this clicking? What might have very well changed in the context of where this season started and where they're at now? Which is why, number one, we can't have a rookies and sophomores pod and not talk about Cooper Flagg. I mean, that just has to happen, John.
Is he your number one on the list?
He would be the number one most intriguing guy on my list right now, purely from the standpoint of where this season started for Cooper Flagg. Them rolling out the point Cooper Flagg experiment, you know, putting him in the backcourt as the sole ball handler, maybe putting him with only one other guy who could handle the ball in the backcourt, trying to just force feed him as many reps, as many on-ball possessions as possible. And it didn't work out to great results. So much so that I didn't have him among my four or five best rookies to start the year in my rookie rankings. I do for No Ceilings NBA.
Really?
That I share on social media. It wasn't coming together. Now, defensively, John, he's been awesome all year on the defensive side of the ball. But now they've started to really get him in more lineups where he's the small forward. He's playing with two other ball handlers. It also helps that Anthony Davis is back in the mix. But what I wanted to see more from the start of the year, and they weren't giving me this, now they finally are. We're getting some Ryan Nemhard action, and we're seeing some real Ryan Nemhard minutes. So these last two games, John, per synergy with both of them on the floor, they're scoring 1.41 points per possession in transition, which would be first in the league across these two games. I know, two games, small sample size. This whole season's a small sample size up to this point.
Yeah.
And then in half court, 1.13 points per possession, which would also be first in the NBA. Those two across two games against two pretty decent to good opponents seem to already be clicking very well. And it's because you have a guy in Nemhard who can get to anywhere he wants to on the floor. He can make all the plays he needs to. He is a threat to score and pass. And you're taking that burden off Cooper to where he is the secondary guy. You can work him off a handoff. You can run him off another ball screen action. You essentially make his life easier to the point where I'm catching the ball. Either I'm going up to score or I'm going to make another easy pass. And you've made his life so much more simplified to now you're seeing the best out of Cooper Flagg from a scoring standpoint. And he's taken off. I mean, his production across the board, 17 points per game, almost 7 rebounds, 3 assists on the season, 48% from the field. Per synergy, he's averaged to very good on all play types except for spot ups, still sporting a 12 turnover rate on 147 pick and rolls, including passes. So you've introduced the element of he's not just starting a lot of those offensive possessions with that play type. He's 37th in the NBA in defensive box plus minus. I touched on how good he's been on defense all season. You're seeing him really take shape as a two-way force, so much so that he is now firmly back as the leader in the Rookie of the Year race for me. The only rookie analytically producing across more key stats than he is right now is Cedric Howard by a razor thin margin. And that guy's not taking on nearly as much usage and responsibility as Flagg is right now in Dallas. So that's why he, to me, is the most interesting young player right now.
So you mentioned the guy who is number one on my personal most intriguing list, Cedric Howard, in Memphis, only because, again, I tried to do as much homework as I could after we said we were going to do the show. And I did not realize that he was – I knew he was scoring, but I didn't realize he was filling up box scores. Not to the degree Flagg is, but filling up box scores like he is, and at that size. And then just Memphis just seems to find these guys late in the – or not late in the draft for him in his case, but, like, not where you would expect to find that sort of player. But then, Coward, it seems like pretty more obvious, like, what he is going to be. He is – you know, in the mold of a leading scoring option. With Cooper, are you one of those people who sees Cooper as, like, he should be the best second option in the league, or the best ancillary, like, best, you know, supporting character in the league? Or do you see a world where, like, he can be the quote unquote best player on a team that is eventually competing for championships?
Oh, for sure. Option B. I mean, okay. Cooper is still only 18 years old. He's just turning 19 in a few weeks of us doing this podcast. I mean, he is still so young, John. He has so much more room to grow. And let's not forget, he followed a similar offensive trajectory when he started at Duke last season. The numbers weren't entirely popping off the page from an efficiency standpoint. He was producing, but from an efficiency standpoint, those numbers weren't popping off the page until we got into later December, January, and then conference play. I mean, this guy just took off as a shooter in conference play in the ACC, and then you saw that throughout the tournament. So I think the best that we're going to see from Cooper Flagg this season is still yet to come. And obviously, if that's the case, he has such a long runway throughout his career that I'm not putting a ceiling on Cooper Flagg. Those discussions that we saw on social media where we saw that Cooper Flagg might be like the fifth or sixth best prospect in this coming draft class, that stuff is so absurd to me. I would still have him number one. If I was ranking all of those top guys, I would still have Cooper Flagg number one. He'd still be the guy I would want to draft and develop for the long term. Dallas, they fell ass backwards into it. It's incredible, but they have such an awesome player in Cooper Flagg.
I know we're not talking the draft that's coming up on this show, but have you thought about where you would have him in comparison to the top two kids that are coming out in this class?
Yeah, I would have Cooper number one. So if I had to do the board right now, it would be Cooper Flagg, Cam Boozer, Darren Peterson would be my top three.
Wow. Okay. That's lofty praise. Last thing on Cooper, and then we got to move on because we got a whole rest of the list to get to. If in a theoretical Anthony Davis trade, is there a player type? I mean, you may have even thought about Anthony Davis trades, but I was going to ask you, is there a player type that if you were the Mavs, you would love to get back in a Davis trade now to pair with Cooper for obviously the rest of this year and for however long after that?
I'd target another wing, ideally someone who can do a little bit of the dribble pass shoot stuff, ideally be a really nice spot up threat for Cooper. And whether it's Kyrie on the floor when he comes back or Ryan Nembhard when he's subbing in, just another really, really solid catch and shoot guy who can also hold his own defensively. Ideally a little bit more than what you're getting from Klay Thompson right now, which I'm not throwing shade at Klay. Like this is
the great end career.
For a great career. That's awesome. Right. But ideally a better version of that for the long term to pair with these guys moving forward.
I love it. Okay, give me your number two after Cooper.
Number two is very near and dear to my heart. The number three player on my board last year is Konkan Ipon with the Charlotte Hornets. How can we not talk about Konkan? If anyone out there listening hates Duke, they probably don't like to hear that I'm starting off with two guys from Duke.
Oh.
On your podcast, but
listen, no, it's Khan, fine. Why do you love Khan?
Khan embodies everything that I want in a basketball player from start to finish on the offensive end of the floor. I mean, this guy, every single thing he does is just quick. It's snappy. He can operate with the ball in his hands. He can operate without the ball in his hands. He's taking nothing off the table from your offense, no matter what role or construct you're putting him in. And he's shown that with Charlotte. I mean, he's been the lead guy for the Hornets without LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller. He's slid right in between those guys and operated just fine. He's shared the floor with two other rookies, John. I can't think of a time, and they're slightly negative right now. Their stats per 100 possessions on cleaning the glass, just slightly negative. But for a long time, the trio of Khan, Kalkbrenner, and Sion was a positive rating per 100 possessions.
Which
That's
is
three rookies. Hey, when was the last time we could talk about three rookies being a net positive for extended minutes.
And one of them, and Zion James is not a guy that, like, I mean, you knew who he was. I'm sure most NBA fans have not thought about him, mm-hmm. you know, before, or probably are not thinking about him now because people aren't watching much of the Charlotte Hornets. I've watched them twice over the last couple of weeks because they've played the Knicks. I also always try to start my watching at 7 p.m. and they are one of the few teams that usually tips off when they're at home, at least at 7 p.m. So I've seen a bit of them this year. We talk a lot about LaMelo Ball on the show. not usually kind. I could see a world in Charlotte where they can and should get very excited moving forward with Knipple, Kalkbrenner, and Miller as like their mm-hmm. trio. We don't have to get into Ball right now, but like, how much ball handling initiation, whatever you want to say, do you think Knipple can do moving forward on a decent team?
I think he's capable of way more than he's being asked to do right now. I'm not saying that he is the quote unquote engine for your offense, but in terms of soaking up more usage, be it from a shot making standpoint or a playmaking standpoint, he can absolutely handle more. And he did it at Duke. Matter of fact, it's really interesting when we take a look at Khan having his best stretch of games without LaMelo and Brandon Miller on the floor. Yeah. At Duke, he had some of his best moments when Cooper Flagg was not on the floor. When he had to miss some time in that ACC tournament, he had to take on more for that Duke team. Khan stepped up to the challenge because he's just so sound in his decision-making, his process. You rarely see him make a mistake. Again, he blends in with everyone. He's like the perfect ideal guy you would want to have on your team. It's incredible with how good he's been. And that really, to me, was just the zoom out big picture theme of what the Hornets draft was last year, which is why I loved it so much. It was my favorite draft of any team. You just brought in four guys who were no nonsense. They know what their role is. Their job is on the court. They're not going to make mistakes. They're going to make the right play. And that's the foundation that the Hornets are now looking to build. And you can see that in what they're doing on the court. I mean, they're losing. It's not like we're talking about them in like the play-in race, the playoff race or like that. But their games are fun to watch in the East because they're just doing a lot of the right things on the court. And you haven't been able to say that the last few years in Charlotte.
Is there any team in the NBA right now where the polar ends of the – how they can play, because you have the moments in their games where they play like you just talked about, where they're doing the right things, where they're like a fun, bad, but fun young team. And then you have the circus and the nonsense that we saw again most recently against the Knicks the other night in the fourth quarter, where I mean we were doing a playback watch along and we were cackling at some of the stuff. And it's, again, it's not that LaMelo Ball's an untalented player or even a bad player, but like, just so I am.
No, we share the same opinion about LaMelo Ball. Most likely.
So I it's like having a political discussion at the dinner table on Thanksgiving. You want to tread lightly because you don't know how the other person, like, okay, I don't want to say anything that might upset the apple cart here. Shout out to the apple cart discussion on Zach's podcast the other day. I feel like the Hornets are, there should probably be a reckoning coming. The problem is like, okay, if they decide they're going to fully pivot in this direction, are they trying to get like real value for the likes of Ball and Bridges?
My longstanding favorite fake trade that's out there that still has a very real possibility of happening is sending LaMelo Ball to the Sacramento Kings. Now, I don't know what you're going to get back from the Kings in that deal, but that just seems like a very Kings trade to make. I've been joking about it with my good buddy at Nick at No Ceilings for the last year. I'm like, it's going to happen, dude. And then we heard the LaMelo Ball wants to get out of Charlotte stuff. I'm like, oh my God, Nick, it's actually going to happen. Like, I don't know.
Can partners with Fanatics Sportsbook over at Knicks Film School. Can we get a line on the Kings making a trade for a max salary point guard before the deadline? It would have to be even money at this point, I think, given the sheer volume of potential options out there for them.
Great shout to the sponsor. Get that lineup. I'll go make a bet on that tomorrow. You get that lineup. I'll throw some action on that. Why not?
Okay, so I was going less like guys that are clear like studs, and so you have not named a player on my list yet. So I'm gonna go. Who's your number three?
Yeah. Well, I can go down the list. I can give you a curveball if you want one.
I was saving
the sicko stuff for the end of the show as a reward for anyone who's listening through the whole episode. But I mean, we can go wherever you want, John.
No, I want your number three. I'm not asking you to divert. Give me your number three most intriguing rookie or sophomore.
My number three is Alex Sarr for the Washington Wizards. A stud he's been, John, on a team in the Washington Wizards who not enough people are probably watching for good reason, right? Like we have bad fun basketball in Charlotte. In Washington, it can just be bad. Like from start to finish, it can be rough.
Beat the Bucks in a very fun game.
They did.
In the second half.
They did. But listen, Sarr's stats, 19 points per game, 8.6 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 51, 35, 64 from the field. There's two players in the NBA with a rebounding rate of 15% or more, an assist rate of 18% or more, a block rate of 5% or more in usage, 26 or more. Can you guess who? Obviously, one of the guys is Alex Sarr. I'm spoiling the thing, but can you guess who the other guy is?
Can you give me the numbers one more time?
Rebounding rate above 15, assist rate above 18, block rate above 5, and usage above 26.
Oh, is it Jokic?
It's Wembanyama.
Oh, okay.
So Alex Sarr, I'm not calling him Wembanyama, obviously, but like this is the type of player that's in Washington. The Wizards are almost 12 points per 100 worse with him off the floor. So think about how bad it is. Think about how bad it could be if Sarr wasn't a routine player for them. And the best part about it with Sarr, he doesn't even have the best point guard partner for him to actually feed him the ball right now. I mean, Sarr on with Bub playing the point guard, Bub Carrington, they're minus 19 points per 100 possessions. With CJ McCollum pulling the levers, they're 6.3 points per 100 possessions better. So that's just with CJ McCollum, who's not even a traditional point guard, obviously doing a great job at balancing the table for everyone. He's a vet, but he probably won't be on this team. But to think about if they had a real deal point guard in this lineup, what if they would have got Dylan Harper last year in the draft? What if maybe this coming year they get someone like a Darren Peterson? And now you're really starting to not only see what Sarr has more in the tank as he's continuing to develop, but what some of these other young guys have. I just think it's phenomenal how good a 7-footer's been, a guy whose primary job is not to create everything for himself and others, ideally to be more of a play finisher, how good he's been without one of the biggest positional holes in the NBA, which is the Wizards at point guard.
And a guy you didn't mention who I'll just say is number five on my list. Kishon George is not a point guard, but he has kind of been playing some point guard for the Wizards this year just because they don't have the personnel. I don't know how else to say that. Like, what I like about Sarr, and the Wizards played a game against the Knicks a couple weeks ago, and like Cat put him in the basket a couple times, but even with those moments, he has some shit to him. You could tell he has some shit to him, and he, like, the body is maybe not there yet. I don't know what he's eventually going to – I mean, what is he going to look like in 2-3 years? I'm not sure. But it feels like there's a happy medium where he could be able to hold up, down there, obviously, but also still be able to do all of the stuff on the court that makes him such an exciting prospect. Here's another hot take, I guess. If I was a Washington fan, I'd be fucking thrilled right now.
Yeah.
Because, you have a couple – like, you don't have that guy, but you have obviously your pick this year. Hopefully the lottery gods are, smile upon you. And, like, there's enough there to look at and be like, okay, the Carrington thing didn't work out. I would probably like to have Denny more, but it's still pretty good.
Well, I mean, you got my boy Blue and Bilal Coulibaly, who hasn't even found the best version of himself yet.
Are we still where are we at on Bilal? Because I really liked what I saw from him as a rookie, and it feels like the train has just kind of been idling since then.
I was on a Wizards podcast the other day. Shout out to that awesome Clutch Points podcast that I was on, and the primary topic that they wanted to discuss was Bilal specifically, because I wrote up a beautiful piece on him pre-draft where I essentially went back and I tracked how wild his development curve was over an 18-month period before the draft when he was over in France.
Okay.
In the junior program. And
on Wemby's team, right?
Yeah, correct. On Wemby's team, part of that grouping. And listen, the stuff with Bilal, it's not fair to criticize him too harshly because I think he's just had too many injuries. He hasn't had right time to develop chemistry with guys. We don't even know who's going to be on this team from the Wizards next year. But I think to me, the biggest red flag, John, is that his at-rim finishing has gone down considerably. Like a guy who's 6'6", as athletic as he is, unless he has a clear takeoff point to dunk at home, he has struggled finishing at the basket, only 50% at the rim. And listen, when you're a guy whose shot diet's going to be primarily focused inside the arc, not outside of it, I understand that the 3-point attempt rate, you want to balance the math battle in the NBA. 3 is greater than 2, but 2 is greater than 0. And if you can't count on enough of those 2s going in, you're digging yourself into an even deeper hole, to the point where if your Bilal is your best role just as a defensive ace coming off the bench, and then in that case, if that's the answer, what are the Wizards going to do in a year, 18 months from now when they got to do a contract extension for him?
It's like, to be very clear, I'm not comparing these two players because I don't know the two players could be any more different in the NBA. It reminds me a little bit of the Obi Toppin conversation from a few years ago where Obi could do some legitimately special things on a basketball court, but in order to you kind of needed to make not like roster building decisions, but at the very least lineup decisions to accommodate that skill set. But then you're like, okay, is it worth it? You know, because what are we talking about here? We're talking about a guy who is on a good team, whatever, a seventh or eighth man. And like, Bilal can do some really special things, especially on the defensive end. What is the level of accommodation, and is it worth it for a player that's going to slot in wherever he does on your totem pole there? I think these are some of the interesting, you know, things that I'm curious to see where the league goes moving forward, especially, and it's more challenging with him because Obi, you could at least kind of get away with playing him at the five. And Bilal, I don't know, maybe like, look, Star turns into a shooter and he's your Josh Hart or something. I don't know. I'm curious.
You're right though. Wizards fans should be incredibly excited between Star's development. Keyshawn George is a great call out. I had another ideal dribble pass shoot defend wing with real size, 6'8". They have two real building blocks there. Also, I don't know if we've seen nearly enough from Trey Johnson to figure out what they got in his
pick. It feels like he hasn't played as much as maybe a player on this team taken that high should play, right?
Well, even when he's on the floor, I don't think they're utilizing him in nearly enough actions to take advantage of his best strengths as a shooter. And then I still think there's a little bit more you can even run with him in the pick and roll game. Like with Trey got lost in the shuffle last year in draft discourse because he wasn't viewed as a high volume passer. And you're right, like he's looking to score. That's his first instinct on the court. But when he sees an opening, he can make almost any pass you need him to make. So I still think there's a long runway for development with him. But yeah, what Washington's building, you get another high pick in this draft. I love what they've been building. I know it's a rough patch that fans probably want to get out of the losing at some point, but I really like it.
All I will tell them, do not fuck around and win too many games, because you look at no, I'm not kidding around. You look at these other teams who have their picks. Like, I know there's some like thought, oh, maybe the Pacers are going to start to try to win games. No, they're not going to be that dumb. Between them and the Nets and just the Pelicans, who cannot seem to get out of their own way, even though they don't have their pick. I just don't win too many games, Washington. Because
hey, you know what? The Pelicans did not make. I did not put either of their rookies on my list. I absolutely could have. But like in my rookie rankings right now, those two guys for me are sitting at 5 and 6.
So
for all the crap that they've gotten for that trade, and rightfully so, the process was so incorrect. Huh. However, in terms of the evaluation of the talent, they could be walking away with two of the best rookies in this class. Yeah. And for that, you at bare minimum have great foundational building blocks moving forward, which was another piece that I took some time writing over on NoSlingsNBA.com.
I was about to say,
go check that out. But
that was such a great piece on Queen and Fears, and really gave me a lot to think about with Fears in particular, who like he, so I didn't want to put two Pelicans on my list. I ended up going with Queen on mine. But it, no, you're right. Like again, Pelicans fans, as bad as that trade was, there's reason to be happy and have hope. Okay. Who's your number four?
My number four is Reed Shepherd, baby. Houston Rockets. This guy has been cooking, and I'm going to get into some shooting stuff in a second,
Scott,
but Reed is the only player in the NBA right now with an assist rate of 17 or more, a steal rate of 3 or more, a block rate of 2 or more, and a BPM greater than 5. So I have plenty of shooting numbers I can throw at you, but this guy is producing across the board in the role that's being asked of him. He has been a point guard for this team. He's played in lineups where he hasn't been the primary point guard. He's just been awesome everywhere that he's been. This team is 15.9 points per 100 better with him on the floor. His one of their most popular lineups that I wish they keep going to with him, Amen Thompson, Kevin Durant, Jabari Smith, and Alperen Şengün. That lineup is plus 37.9 points per 100 better. I mean, these guys in Houston, again, the offense is not what you would expect a modern offense to look like. That's been bandied about on so many NBA podcasts up to this point, but Reed Shepherd is playing a big part of it in Houston, and it's the versatility in his game. He's good to excellent per synergy in his top four play types, which would be pick and roll, spot ups, transition, and handoffs. The transition stuff, the amount of offense he's creating as a passer in transition is off the charts. And then this guy is lacing shots, John, from everywhere on the court. So I did a little exercise putting together some jump shooting numbers. Now, these are twos and threes, but all jump shots. Right. Only one other player in the NBA has taken as many jump shots overall, jump shots off the catch and off the dribble, as Reed Shepherd, and has matched or exceeded his efficiency per synergy sports. I couldn't believe who the other player was. I sat down and thought about it for 5 minutes, and I was like, no, I can bring myself to reason with this. Do you have any guesses who the other player could possibly be who have just lived taking jump shots and have been as good as Reed on them?
Well, it's no one on the Knicks.
Actually, you know what? It is someone on the Knicks. This is why I did this. I did this for you.
Is it Mikal?
It sure is.
I was about to say, literally, you took the words out of my mouth. I was like, if it's anybody, it's Mikal Bridges. But wow.
I listen, now when you live in the doldrums as much as I do and you're watching the young guys, they're not always on the best teams, John. So I haven't watched as much Knicks basketball this year as I have in years past.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that initially. When I'm like, he's been that good. But I mean, the Knicks are one of the best teams in the East. So if they're going to be one of the best teams, you got to have one of those guys. So.
Yeah, he's still a little bit light above the break, but Mikal hasn't missed from the mid range or the corners all year. So yeah, no, that's
a good think call about out. How unique of a player Reed has been, and so many people wanted to write him off after his rookie season. He looked too small out there. What are you going to do with this guy defensively if he's not knocking down shots? What are you doing with him as a point guard? My whole thing with Reed, I had him as a top five prospect in that draft, but my whole thing with him was, if you're not going to give him the runway to develop as a point guard, why would you take a chance on drafting him this high? Because if all he's going to do is be a spot up shooter, movement guy, I get someone who's 6'6" to 6'8" to do that, and they're probably going to give me a little more defensively just based on physical attributes, length, the whole package. But Reed has been so special with what Houston's asked him to do, and he's only going to get better. He's still a young guy. He's only 21 years old. Like, the Houston really got lucky with this pick in terms of them taking the chance to make it. It seems to be working out for them right now, and it's at a time where they need it most because Fred's not coming back anytime soon. They don't have other answers in the point guard room other than Amen Thompson and maybe some lineups with Aaron Holiday. Like, the Houston, what they're getting out of Reed is just so awesome.
I completely agree that given – and look, the West is – I get it. The West is a bloodbath. You do not – like – a team like Houston has enough of the goods that they do need to prioritize not falling to fourth. They have to make sure they are in the 2-3 bracket. So I want to be careful as I say this. You have to give him, I don't know what the minute total is, but you have to give him the runway you're talking about, because you need to decide, is it worth it for us to put the ball in his hands down the stretch of a close game, as opposed to some of the other options on our basketball team, which are pretty good. And like, if the ball is not in his hands, if we get to the end of the season and say, okay, we're not there yet with him, then, you know, what does that look like for, let's say, a Rockets closing lineup in the last 5 minutes of a close game? They are as interesting a team building. Again, I mean, we're not going to go back to the Giannis thing, but like, what do those meetings sound like right now?
Yeah.
Inside Houston's offices. Because I'm sure they're having him, but I just, you know, Reed's been awesome. That's a great call out. All right, another player that wasn't on my list. I'm curious, who's your fifth? Because we have one more shot to see if you got anyone from my top five.
I doubt you got this guy on your list. This is sicko hour for me. This is giving the people what they want. If they expected me to come on with five guys who they didn't know about, who were producing and being interested in the NBA, Paul Larson with the Miami Heat.
Pell Larson has killed the Knicks all year. Okay. Talk to me about Pell Larson, please.
So 6'5" guard slash wing with the Miami Heat right now. He's 24 years old out of Arizona. He was the 44th pick in the 2024 NBA draft. And it's a sweet spot for me because everything that I've done in building the Draft Deeper brand, everything we do at No Ceilings is about, and this is my guy Maxwell, literally has a whole column series, No Stone Unturned, literally not leaving any stones unturned when trying to identify talent, even if a guy's on the old side. Just what can they do? How can they help me today? And how can we help them get better tomorrow? That's the name of the game. Don't be ageist. Don't hate on the old guys, because look what Pell Larson's doing for the Miami Heat. He's giving them 9 points a game, 46% from the field, shooting well from 3-point range. He's got a great assist rate, keeping the turnovers low. And he's been a very productive player for this team. They're 4.1 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor, in 212 possessions when he's on the floor with their best offensive player, Norm Powell, and their best defensive player, in Bam Adebayo. Of course, this is before, you know, Tyler Hero started coming back.
Yeah.
Plus 20 points per 100 possessions better. So this guy's taken nothing off the table from them from a production standpoint. They got him at the 44th pick. They got him for cheap. And my biggest thing with Pell before that draft was he reminded me an awful lot of Christian Brown. Lot of Christian Brown. Now, Christian Brown has, I think, shattered everyone's expectations in Denver with the amount of money that he's making now.
$150 million shattered some expectations. Yeah.
But Christian Brown, if you compare where he was at in their sophomore season versus where Pell's at right now, All of the statistics across the board are eerily similar. It's to the point where the main difference between them is Christian was a better rebounder at this stage. Larson actually has him beat pretty handily in passing metrics. And then Christian is getting more opportunities as a pick and roll ball handler. Larson's, I think, only ran like five this season for Miami, so he's not being asked to do anything on the ball. But Larson's last year at Arizona, he ran 176 possessions as the pick and roll playmaker, including passes, and he rated in the 79th percentile, low turnover rate on those possessions. He was a 51% scorer out of pick and rolls at Arizona. I mean, this guy, dribble, pass, shoot, defend. Name of the game, Pell Larson's doing it all for Miami, and these are the types of wins on the margins an NBA team has to be able to make if they want to actually contend.
I said it the other night after the Knicks-Celtics game. I was like, has Boston surpassed, I think I said Miami and maybe like San Antonio, as the team that does the best job of, with all the margin stuff, finding guys either whether it's in the draft or on the scrap heap, maybe not scrap heap, that's too strong for it, but guys like you could get pretty easily and bringing them in, and you know they're going to fit in your system with what you want to do, how you're going to coach them, the brand of basketball that you want to play. And then you bring up a guy like Pell Larson's like, no, Miami's still probably the best in the league at this shit, which is just the most aggravating.
Hey, you know what? Boston had Jordan Walsh go off for 22 points last night. I'd say that's pretty good. They got him cooking now,
dude. It's kudos to that team that is doing what they're doing, and I'm again a fascinating story about which way, you know, they go to, you know, talk about the whole Tatum part of it. I gotta get you out of here. I'm just gonna say my list. Number one was Dylan Harper. Okay. Because it's just so early and like the what could be of it all. I had three big men in my 2, 3, and 4. I didn't really settle on an order. I had Ware, speaking of the Miami Heat, Zach Edey, and then Derek Queen, and then I had George as my fifth. So, yeah.
We could have done a whole podcast on your list, man. Maybe that's a return trip. We got to come back and revisit some of those guys, but for sure.
Literally list. 30 seconds or less. Where are you on Edie? Because he's just such an intriguing and kind of polarizing figure.
I really liked him before the draft. I still like him now. I think that you can have concerns about his defense away from the basket and all those little nitpicky types of things, but there just is not another guy in the NBA right now in his – not even in his physical prime, approaching his prime, as dominant in the paint as a paint scorer, you know, as Zach Edey is at his age. I mean, it's phenomenal. Like, you talk about the most recent big you can compare him to is someone like a Valanciunas, but I don't think Valanciunas was as good as Edey was at his age. I mean, Edey, and if he really gets the three ball cooking, I mean, goodness, he's taken steps forward as a passer out of the post. He's getting better when teams are doubling him. We already know he's a good scorer in the paint. If he starts making some of those threes, it's like a trailer, like a pick and pop guy. I mean, what are you going to do to this guy? Like, he absolutely is one of Memphis's top prospects that they need to prioritize moving forward.
Yeah, and again, talk about Charlotte maybe being at a reckoning point. Maybe say the same thing about the Memphis Grizzlies. This was great. We, of course, ran out of time, so I can't go through all of our comments. I will just shout out Dirty Dancer. Please don't grade the Knicks rookies and sophomores. Dirty Dancer, we will not grade Tyler Kolek or Pacome. What? I mean, Pacome Dottier, that wouldn't even be an incomplete. That would be ACS is going to your house to check if, like, what? Why is your child not showing up to school?
Nathan, we don't need to talk about the Knicks missing on some international draft picks. We could be here for a while. We don't got to go down that rabbit hole.
Dude, it's... Like, thank God Tyler Kolek is having a few moments here and there for this team, because otherwise, you know, we love Leon Rose here in New York. But
shout out to Dirty Dancer, too. He is a frequent listener and watcher on the No Ceilings YouTubes as well. So shout out to Dirty Dancer.
Dirty Dancer's been a really long time, like, very great supporter of Knicks Film School. And I don't know what I would do without him. All right. Nathan, tell people where they could find you, your stuff, anything you want to talk about before I get out of here.
100%. John, this was a pleasure to do. Like I said, I relish any opportunity to talk about the young guys in the NBA, developmental tracks, how guys are getting better. You can find me on Twitter at DraftDeeper. You can find all of my work on NoCeilingsNBA.com. I do a written column every Tuesday. I publish rookie rankings and coming soon sophomore rankings, usually around the end of the week on social media. And then I'm on a podcast, Locked On NBA Draft with No Ceilings. My episodes up with Maxwell every Tuesday as well. So Tuesdays, if I'm probably doing some kind of content, just follow my social. You'll find it all on Tuesday.
I was about to say, if you're not following Nathan on social media, on Twitter, like, you're doing yourself a disservice. Get on board with that, because, like, what you guys do at No Ceilings, it's like, it's, you know, you are the best at what you do. So it's, you know, as we get more and more content options as people, as NBA fans, like, when you could hone in on, like, okay, if I need this, I'm going to go here. It's nice to know that you guys are there, because you just, you know, you're killing it. So that's awesome stuff, man.
That's kind words, John. We appreciate any support over at No Ceilings. We really try and just do a great job of informing the public, but also not necessarily with our content, trying to make us sway your opinion after you read one of our articles or listen to one of our podcasts. We want people out there to just at least take some things away and just think about how it impacts their philosophies, how it impacts how they're seeing and watching players. And just if I can at least get that out of you, because I don't want to sway you on a prospect in like 30 seconds. If I can, you probably didn't have that strong of a stance to begin with. But if I can get you to think, that's really my goal. That's our goal in No Ceilings. And but we have an awesome community, and everyone on their social media, everyone who supports us, it's been a blast. It really is a lot of fun.
But that's where the goods are at. It's at it's the philosophies, because the fun. I mean, look, what we get to watch on the court every night with all the good teams that are out there, and even some of the bad teams, that's fun. But, like, the team building philosophy stuff, to me, is at a better point right now. With what, like, we're not going to go on a whole thing. We got to get you out of here. But, like, I love that is how you in particular handle your coverage of these guys where you're really thinking about trying to like think, okay, well, if I had this player or these players mm-hmm. on my team and I was their front office, you know, how am I thinking about that long term? How am I thinking about the other pieces? It's great stuff, man. It truly is.
Thank you so much for the kind words, John. Appreciate it.
All right, Nathan, thank you for coming on the show. Make sure everybody's following him on social. Check out No Ceilings. I am Jonathan Macri, signing off for another episode of NBA Takedown. Remember, help out the show in any way you can. Give us a nice review, a 5-star rating. Make sure you are following us wherever you get your podcasts and, of course, subscribing on YouTube. We will be back with more fun and games on Monday. Everybody have a great weekend. Peace out.